Please don't.
Oh, okay. The jokes are flying already. All right.
Please don't put that. Oh,
that's going to be the intro.
That's going to be the opening.
That's the opening.
So,
you guys are going to have me cracking up. I hear it already.
No, that's all right. That's the goal.
That's, like, that's the point.
You're the cheap instigator. I can already see this.
Oh, no.
Actually, that's usually me. Jim's the one who asks like the worthwhile questions.
I've listened to these podcasts. I know what your duties.
Hello and welcome back to Street PX, a photography podcast. It has been a crazy few weeks, and I want to go ahead and start out and apologize for the delayed nature of this episode. We had some troubles, some audio issues in our last one, and I'm still working on that, and we're still going to have that show ready for you here soon.
James Mayer, right?
James Mayer.
From New York City.
Yes, and it was an amazing show.
Yes.
But we had some technical troubles in the production side, so that one's going to be delayed a little bit. But we are coming back to you here this week. This is episode number 45, August 11, and as always, I am Casper.
And this is Jim Watkins.
Yes, and I'm rambling.
That's right. That's See, all right. That's all right, but then you know what? That's cool.
Yes, yeah.
That's cool.
It keeps things interesting, right?
That's right. That's right.
Well, to start off with some quick plugs, first thing I want to bring up is the London Street Photography Festival. That one's going to be going on August 25th through 27th, so here in a couple of weeks. I wanted to bring that up because, obviously, street photography related. We love festivals, and one of our friends is a finalist in that.
Ken Walton.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Congratulations, Ken, for getting that image selected there, man. But that, if you're interested in it, you can always do a Google search for London Street Photography Festival. It's going to be at the Stour Space at 7 Roach Road there in London. And we'll put a link up in the show notes, of course.
That's
too.
Good, yeah.
Something else I want, a couple other things I want to bring up is workshops. I have a street photography workshop that's actually going on next week, so the 17th and 18th. So if you're in the Bay Area and you're looking to learn some things and just join us for a nice walk through San Francisco, we have 3 seats left, and you can find out more information about that at recasper.com or visiting the harveymilkphotocenter.org website and click on classes, and you can get some more information there. And the most exciting thing, Film Week.
Oh, can't wait.
We've been putting that off for a while. We've been getting some messages from listeners that's wondering when the hell we're going to be doing this again. We did it last year, and it went off wonderfully, setting up the walks. Remember those?
Yeah, I remember those. Man. Those were fun, man.
Yes,
I tell
you. Got to dust off the old analog camera.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You got yours ready?
Nope. But it will be by the time Film Week comes around.
Well, we're definitely looking at doing this there in late September. We say Film Week, but that's just, you know, a week dedicated to the funds of shooting analog, 35mm, medium format, what have you, whatever your choice is. But the same way we did last year, we're going to do again where we set up walks. We're going to have a film-centric episode.
Mm-hmm.
Don't want to release any names yet on that, but it's going to be great. And if you're a film shooter or just getting into film, this is a great opportunity to send in questions to us that we're going to be discussing in that episode.
That's right, yeah.
That's the main plugs I have. Oh, tonight, the exhibit over at Harvey Milk.
Oh, that's right.
Yes,
that's
yes.
right.
Which, you know, is where we're
How
at
can we
right
forget?
Now. Yeah, we're sitting right in the Harvey Milk Photo Center right now, and I almost forgot. It's the Member, Staff, and Volunteers exhibit.
It's an annual exhibit. Yes,
yep,
it is.
Yep, and that one's going on starting at 5 p.m. And goes until about 8 p.m. that night. So it's going to be wonderful imagery from members, staff, and volunteers of the Harvey Milk Photo Center from a varying range of different types of work. So if you like street, if you like landscape, cityscapes.
Just come on by.
Yeah, yeah. Our sponsor.
Yeah.
Our sponsor, Glass Key Photo.
We got to give Gordon and Matt some love here.
We
man.
Do, especially now that they've changed locations.
They have moved. Yeah, I actually stopped by there. It looks fantastic.
Oh, enlightened.
Yeah,
tell us about
well,
it.
You know, well, when I was there, they didn't have everything moved in yet. They're still waiting for a few things, but it's a great location. The store looks great. You know, but like I said, at the time I was there, it was pretty empty. They were still working to get it done. But man, it's gonna be fantastic once it's complete.
How big does it look compared to the old one?
It's a lot bigger than the other. It's because the other one was a closet. Basically, true. It was pretty small. But this is you know, it looks a lot newer. You know, it's a lot fresher, and
it's right there off Van Ness too. Right, so it's right nice and easy.
Yeah, Van Ness and Sutter, I think.
Yep. Van Ness and Sutter.
Yeah.
So easy to get to, and yeah, you go get your analog fix and camera repairs.
That's right.
Yeah, I wonder if they do lenses, because one of my lenses crashed and burned this past weekend.
You have to tell us about that later.
Well, that's what I get for putting it in my top pocket.
Right. Uh-huh.
Anyway, a big, big thank you to Glass Key Photo out there for sponsoring us. And if you, as a listener, want to help us keep these mics hot and the bandwidth flowing, definitely go to patreon.com/streetpx. You can give $1, give $5, $10, whatever you feel comfortable with. And every penny goes right back into the show. Jim, let's go ahead and jump on into this and let you introduce our wonderful guest.
Well, today we have an esteemed guest today, the director of the Harvey Milk Photo Center here in San Francisco, California, Dave Christensen. How are you, Dave?
I'm great today.
Hey,
how are you guys?
Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me today.
Yeah.
We're glad to have you. We've been kind of talking about doing this one for a while, but I know in your position, as well as what we're doing, getting those schedules to combine is not easy.
The challenge.
This guy is really important, people.
Every day. Every day.
Well, just kind of a little background, though, on the just to kind of give you guys an idea, the Harvey Milk Photo Center has been here in the Bay Area for, what is it, over 75 years, right?
75 years this spring.
This spring. Mm-hmm. So a major congratulations on that. That's some history right there.
At this location since 53, 54.
Wow. Wow. And now you haven't been the director that long, right?
No. I haven't drank the Fountain of Youth yet. But, I've been here 8 years. Jim is ageless. So.
Yeah, that's what they tell me. But really,
he's still in his adolescence.
The body is falling apart.
Well, let's go ahead and kind of jump in the time machine and move back a little bit and tell us kind of about yourself. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Madison, Wisconsin, way back in the Midwest, and have a lot of family and friends back there. My parents are from the Midwest, that area. Mm-hmm. And oldest of, I have a brother and a sister. My brother lives out here, which is great.
Oh, okay.
Nice. And I have family and cousins and nephews that live 4 blocks from my house. So that's good and bad.
Mm-hmm. Got the Everybody Loves Raymond thing going
built
on.
Built-in babysitter.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh,
that's handy.
I have lots of kids' games in my family room, which... doesn't make sense, but
now you're over on the other side of the mountain, right?
I'm in the East Bay.
Yeah, so you get to ride that wonderful BART on in.
Oh, please don't start me. There'll be a lot of bleeps.
Oh, yes.
It's the Bay Area Rapid Transit for you guys that are not not in the Bay Area.
It's called penance twice a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pay the toll, not just money.
Right. So I actually lived in the city for many years. Moving from Chicago, from Madison, as a commercial photographer in Chicago.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
I worked for Cranston Studios, which was the biggie in Chicago for commercial work, product, tabletop, fashion. And we worked mainly with a lot of clients in Chicago and the bulk from New York, which was magazine, catalog, and advertising.
Yeah.
And so I was lucky enough to be taken on with a visit to them one afternoon with my portfolio and got to shoot a lot of fashion on location, people, product, which was really, really fun.
Mm.
It was like being in the studio system, giant enterprise. It was about 6 blocks from the Sears Tower in Chicago. It would be, as the crow flies, I guess that would be southwest from the tower.
Okay.
And it was not far from the station, the main train station there.
Oh, yeah, Union Station over there, yeah.
So we did a lot of shoots there at that station as well for clients. So
what years were you there? I'm curious.
Let's see, going back into the archives, probably I was there in the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Early to mid 80s.
Yeah. Okay.
It was a lot of fun. It was like being, you would have carpenters and set designers and
the whole production crew.
All large format, all film actually, back in the day. I shot 1114 Deerdorfs on top of ladders way up in the studio, and we had like eight bays in the gallery with setups. And so the production was, you know, shot, which was photographed on, obviously, at the location. That was, you know, held until the client approved the transparencies, which were actually produced downstairs in the same building. So, you walk in, you have a blank slate, and the carpenters arrive, and the set designers arrive, and then we light it. We put the product in place, pop the Polaroids, and then wait for the account executive to show up to approve the shoot for their campaign or their piece. And then we wait till film comes back and transparency. And then they would approve it, sign off on it, and then we'd strike the set and go into another production.
So, just rinse, repeat.
Yeah, so it was like a major amount of work being produced every single day. The fun part for me was the location work. I had, you know, great assistants and stylists and bookers, and you know, it was a real education. It was like getting your doctorates actually in lighting. I was hired for fashion and a lot of tabletop and a lot of jewelry stuff, really high end product.
Yeah, wow.
So you know, one light, one bounce card changes the whole picture.
Especially working with film.
Oh my god. Oh my god. But you know, there's nothing that beats it right now. At least, I mean, you'd go in and you shoot 1114. Color transparency, and you put it up on the light board, and the clarity and the rendition is just so saturated and so incredibly beautiful. I mean, you get so spoiled shooting that format.
It's interesting how far we've come with technology, but yet at the same time, it still hasn't really caught up with the amount of detail and quality that you can get.
I mean, the detail that they're shooting, of course, it's all done now on Polaroid, you know, not Polaroid back, but digital back. And so, you know, the new Hasselblads or whatever they're using has the, you know, 40, you know, megapixel backs, which are, you know, $50,000 cameras.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
They're a lot more expensive than the wooden Deerdorfs we were using, but they were workhorses. I mean, it was fun. It was a really fun experience.
I'm envisioning you kind of moving this beast around the studio there.
It was a beast.
You know, I'm still wondering if we ever ran into each other, because back then I was working about a mile away from you back in those days.
I lived on Lakeshore Drive, actually, at Belmont Marina.
Okay.
It was beautiful, but the winters really sort of slapped you into place real fast.
That's what chased me out of Chicago.
It was bitter cold, hot summers, but the work was really exciting. I mean, it was a crazy pace.
Yeah.
I mean,
you
really got a respect for how many pages each day. My boss would come in and we'd go through layout after layout after layout as far as which shots we were going to do each day. Mm-hmm. We had a production schedule because the piece was going on to press.
We have clients aplenty here. You
know? Yeah, there were major clients. I mean, I shot for Alden's, I shot for Spiegel, I shot for Marshall Fields, I shot for Sears, I shot for JCPenney out of New York. I mean, you know, it was great because it was such a menagerie of photography that you had to accomplish in, you know, whether it's studio driven or location driven.
Yeah.
And learn along the way, too.
And learn around, you know, and I got to work with, you know, guys that were there for, you know, 25 years and, you know, it was a kind of a sketchy entry, I guess, is a way to say it, because I was hired for the fashion work that I was doing, which was location mostly. And so using artificial light on location was kind of my forte.
Okay.
And so I was hired for that, what you produce basically in direct. And so I got some really choice jobs right away on location, which was really, really fun. I mean, that was kind of the icing on the cake to be, you know, plucked and, you know, here you go, you get to go. And it was kind of like, new boy on the block. What is he getting this, you know, this big piece of cake for?
Well, you said you scored that position by coming in with your portfolio. Was that just like on a whim? You just walked in the door and said, hey.
No, I had done research. I had worked in Minneapolis right after college, and I actually was working when I was in college in Madison and Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. And then I went to Minneapolis because I had friends that lived there, and there's a lot going on in Minneapolis as far as advertising.
Yeah, and still to this day.
It still is a lot. There's a lot of product out of there. Target is located out of Minneapolis.
Yep.
And so worked for a lot of shoots for Dayton, Dayton's out of Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. Got to know a lot of the art directors there, magazine people. And so it was a fairly tight-knit community, but a very progressive. Very atypical. I would say it was kind of like a mini New York in, you know, Minneapolis.
Microcosm.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, it was very savvy, and they were doing a lot of groundbreaking things, which was really fun to be part of that, I guess, posse, for lack of other words. So
yeah.
It was fun. I really enjoyed Minneapolis. The winter sort of took it out of you. Took it out of you with a lot of ice storms breaking down trees and no heat and the snow 12 feet up. You know, burying the cars within 4 hours, and
yeah,
it's, you can't be weak stuff living there.
No,
by any stretch.
And that's not. I mean, you also got to consider the wind. I remember dealing with the wind and 45 degree angle walking down the streets with snow and sleet just bearing down on you like.
Oh my God.
Like a war zone.
Don't bring back the nightmares, man.
Oh no. I know. It was just, I guess we grew up with it, and it was kind of like, I guess my father, who's back in the Midwest, says, you know, the winters are not as bad as what you remember. And I'm like, oh, that's nice, because I live on the West Coast now for good reason.
Was he giving you one of those walk uphill both ways in the snow kind of stories? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a car would be buried within 3 or 4 hours from landing in Minneapolis.
Oh yeah.
And you wouldn't know. You'd have to write down where the car was, because the car was completely obliterated, you know, gone with the snowpack over it. And then the lovely, grader would come by within the street, cleaning the streets. There'd be another 20 feet of snow that's heavy and dense and wet covering your cars.
Now you really are bringing back nightmares.
Well, that reminds me of the...
I need a lot of therapy from those two.
Yeah. It just reminds me of the dibs in Chicago, which, you know, out-of-towners don't really, you know, respect until it's too late. You know, you dig your car out, and then there'll be a shopping cart or a baby stroller.
Folding chairs.
Yeah, and you think, oh, well, I can just move that, and that's a great place to park.
Oh, no.
No.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
No, it's going to be bad results.
You want to be thrown into the river real quick. Mess with somebody's parking place that they've dug out.
So from Chicago, you came out here, directly out here?
Before we do that, I was just kind of curious about something, though. When you were working with the with Cranston Studio, how many photographers were working out of that facility?
Oh, my gosh. There were several floors, actually, of that building. It was probably a 10, 12-story building. So, you know, there were 40 photographers on board easily with assistants. I mean, I had one main assistant, and there were assistants under that person. I mean, the studio was set up. It was a huge galley.
Yeah.
And then my assistant, thank God, John was amazing. It was like doing surgery, because you could open up a drawer and you could shut your eyes and grab the piece that you needed blindfolded. It was that neat. It was like a surgery room, basically. Because you had to go at such a speed. Stuff had to be put back correctly, you know, inventoried. I mean, so he was a genius at getting that stuff organized and just letting us fly as fast as we could fly, because we had a production schedule.
Yeah, you're like a manufacturing plant. This had to happen.
You know, if you had problems or the AE was coming in, the account exec was coming in at such and such a time, you had to have the set lit, you had to have the Polaroids ready, you had to, you know, adjust the lighting so that it looked beautiful, repop Polaroids, and so when they walked in, they could do some minor adjustments and approve the shot, and then, you know, usually the clients, and I had a great relationship, so that you could adjust the shot for the art director, because sometimes they worked right from a sketch. I mean, they worked, this is where they want the product, this is where they want the person, this is where they want the light, this is where the copy is going to go on the, you know, the ad.
Right.
So you had to fit that that puzzle really tightly. Wow. So, you know, you had to work under those constraints, and then you had to reinterpret, actually, sort of the art directors and the AEs vibe, I guess, for lack of other words.
Yeah.
And so you'd say, okay, well, this is how I would see it. Can we shoot a couple frames with that? And they usually allow you to do that. So you give the client a lot of what, more than what they actually anticipated, which is what I really walked away with. Mm-hmm. You you keep shooting it, but obviously get what you need and then what's required. And then, you know, what is beyond that point as you see that better than anyone through the ground glass.
Yeah.
Right. And so you can say, well, let's try this, let's try that. Some clients, we destroyed so much clothing, you have no idea. I always wanted to shoot behind the scenes. There was never time to stop and do it. But behind the scenes, I mean, we ruined suits, we ruined expensive, clothing. I mean, anything to get that shot was God. So, slitting the back of a suit and taping it to the model's back.
Whoa.
Having assistant crawl on her back, pulling down the slacks so that there was no creases in some of those clients, as far as, showing off whatever you were shooting for slacks. Some clients didn't want to see any kind of creases that looked natural at all on a shirt sleeve, which was really hard to do as you bend your arm.
Yeah.
Or on a pair of slacks. They didn't want to have any breaks in the slacks, which was, kind of like, really? They're the boss. So
yeah, they get what they want.
I remember my friend Corey crawling down on her belly, and I'm like, hold your breath, Corey, because we have to get more of the slack, and they'd be pulling on the guy's trousers. I'm like, okay, hold it, don't breathe, boom, boom. They're like, the strobes would go off, and then we'd have the shot, and then we'd be talking about other things, going right to it. Some really wonderful people I got to work with.
Yeah.
Great. Speaking of your clients, was there any particular clients or subjects that come to mind or memorable moments?
In Chicago?
Yeah.
The Spiegel clients were actually the best because they let us do an editorial approach to the garment or the product. And so it was much more realistic, and editorial meaning not as tight, much more natural as far as the setting or the mood or the ambience of the piece. Gotcha. So it allowed sort of more of a realistic, that's why they were so successful too, is because people looked real. The image looked real, the energy looked real, the clothing looked real. People could see themselves in that clothing. They were very smart art directors who worked behind that. Mm-hmm. So as far as Chicago, Marshall Fields was another one. They were into much more of a realistic, editorial was the word, look. It was a lifestyle that looked real, had to be believable. Images had, the clothing had to look great, but, clients, the models had to look, natural, fresh.
Right.
Right, yeah.
And believable was the big term.
Yeah.
And throughout the whole session, because, you're working and working, sweating, and
It's actually, people made jokes about, people make jokes about models, but working with them, I worked with some great models. Not in Chicago, but out here, I worked, I had the chance to work with, for example, Kelly Lynch, who's an actress in Los Angeles, or Christy Turlington, who was very famous, from San Francisco. And went to New York, and then it was world famous, obviously.
Yeah. You got to shoot her?
I got to shoot her. I called Jimmy Gramey, who had her here before she went to New York. She's from Danville, actually. And I knew she was, she was the next it girl. There was no question. And really natural and very, very real, I guess, is the best impression. She wasn't, lost in herself. She was very grounded, and she was a chameleon, and she was very fresh. Obviously she hadn't learned the ropes, but I called him and I said, I actually have a picture of her on the wall, the left shot of her, and that was one of the first tests we did actually with Polypan film. And so I called Jimmy Gramey and I said, Jimmy, because I used to shoot a lot of the beauty shots and headshots and portraits of the guys and gals and teens and adults. And so he knew, the look that we would, produce for his models, his stable. So I said, I really want her in my portfolio, my book. Can I have her for an hour? She was impossible to get because of the rate that she was being charged. Mm-hmm. So Jimmy was great.
An hour is a long time too.
An hour is a long time. So we were ready to roll. We had the full crew ready. Everything was ready to roll. Cameras were loaded. Everything is done. You know, hairdresser, my two assistants, everything was ready to roll. And we just said, you know, this is what we're going to do with you. And we did three different things within an hour. And it was just, she just got it. She was just like one of those people that gets the, it was all play.
Yeah.
But she just dropped into character with your direction. And she just followed direction like she had done it 100 years.
Yeah.
Great. Just, and you could tell when you walked away from the shoot, it was like, and real, it's real, very easygoing, you know, knew that this was, she was part of the whole process of this, creating this image. But, you know, once we were finished, right back to being just fresh, normal, not affected, part of the, you know, everyday, you know, like an everyday Joe, it was just like, wow, what a refreshing person. You knew she was going to go way far because she got it, but then she was really real. And so that's what made it even better. I mean, she obviously was blessed with incredible looks.
Now that's the best case scenario. Do you have any disaster stories?
Oh, I knew you were going there.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have to name names now.
No, you don't have to draw names.
There won't be any names.
I was
going to
ask the same question. You were?
Yes. There, unfortunately, there was the other side of the dark side of the planet.
Mm-hmm. Gotta have the balance.
Which, of course, and, you know, that makes it tough for a photographer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because, and the whole crew, because you have a job to do. You really are all like one team, and you're all sort of rowing to get to the finish of this project. And so, you know, unless people really groove with you and really get on board, there, you know, of course are people that, you know, don't let go, don't let down, don't give you themselves, don't say, okay, you're driving the car, mm-hmm. I trust you. I think that's the biggest thing when you're shooting. You have to really, really let that person know, especially if they're, you know, an experienced model, that they're in really, really good hands, you know, whether it's a personality or whether it's a professional fashion model or subject. You know, I've dealt with a lot of executives too. I mean, it's not just models. I dealt with a lot of corporate people that are not models, are not used to being in front of the camera, that need a professional photograph.
Right.
And so their image is really, they're concerned about their image, obviously, and what they're projecting, and if you're capturing that image, and if that image really is projecting. And there's a lot riding actually on that visual, just like in advertising.
Mm-hmm.
They're advertising themselves,
right, exactly,
for their company. So to get that rapport on people that are not used to, you know, feeling intimidated by, with a camera in your face, with lights and all that kind of stuff, and still have to come out natural and come out, you know, approachable and real and not stiff, you know, it takes a psychology to get someone to let down. Because I think people are most attractive and most believable when they are obviously relaxed and obviously real.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Real and not stiff, like this is what I should look like, this is how I should present myself. Because it just reads as stiff and it's stale and it dies.
Yeah,
it dies on, you know, the screen or the film.
Yeah.
So no particular ones of disaster just popping out.
I mean, I'm not going to mention names, but there was a news anchor woman. She's not in the news here anymore, and she came to me because she liked. She saw the work that I did, and she came and she wanted a new headshot,
mm-hmm.
right? And so we photographed quite extensively in black and white and color and gave her the images. And I looked at her book, her portfolio, and it was like, you know, why is everyone blasting her out with too much light? She doesn't have any kind of skin texture. It almost looks like she barely has a nose. It's like so blasted out. And I'm like, well, that's a look that was, you know, I guess popular back in the day. But I said, you know, I think you need a realistic headshot. That's why she hired me to do this work. And so I photographed her in color, transparency. I think it was Ektachrome and Fujichrome and a couple different types of transparency film as well as black and white. So we covered it. And they were beautiful, actually. They were real, attractive, well-composed, beautifully lit, beautifully exposed. And the energy was great in the shot. It was really a step above where she had been. And she was so sort of thrown out of the water by, you know, what was really real and sellable and versus what was shot before that, you know, she ended up trying to sue me.
Oh, what? Wow. Oh, that's... Ah. Photographers so need to always be prepared
I had to actually go to court.
Yeah. Really?
And I had to educate the judge with the work that I had been doing for clients. And I said to him, frankly, I said, you know, as a technical aspect, and the judge is not a technical photographer.
He's not a photographer.
And
anything.
I had to explain to the judge, I said, you know, these are nice photographs, but they are ill-exposed or ill-printed because all the detail is gone. It's hit with too much light. It's a certain look that's done in photography. The look that I was hired for is very realistic, but very flattering. Mm-hmm. And it's well exposed, and it shows the skin tone, and it shows the detail. And it shows, you know, a real, what I call, up-to-date, sellable image. And that's what I was hired for, and that's what I produced, and that's what I gave the client back. So I was not only defending myself, but I was educating the judge.
Yeah.
And they dismissed it at that point.
Oh, thank God for that.
Wow.
But I just felt, you know, like I was being, you know, put over the gallows or something because of the expectation of someone that has not experienced, you know, well-exposed photography. And this person had apparently this image in their head that this is what photography looks like and was really, I guess, not that experienced.
Well, it's an industry where as professionals – that's always going to be something at the back of your head. I mean, there was the recent news about the wedding photographer out of Texas, where the couple ran her name through the mud and destroyed her business.
Yes.
And I mean, I don't know the specifics of the situation, of course, but obviously the jury in the end ended up awarding her a defamation claim and of like $1.8 million something.
This was the bride or the photographer?
The photographer won, they went on a war path on the media. I think the wife was a blogger, professional blogger. I'm not sure what that is, but
professional fashion blogger yes. She was. Yeah.
So she used her means, her audience to really put it out there. She went on the news and just destroyed.
That's so damaging. I mean, that's really damaging.
Oh, this lady had a studio similar to what you're describing.
She had to close it.
She went from being booked for a year to nothing. Mm. And thankfully, the court sided with her in the end, you know, obviously. But that is something that us as professionals, especially in commercial, that's a risk.
Mm-hmm.
That's ever present. But thankfully, yours came out well.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're under the microscope and you're under the fire. You're under fire, basically, at that point. So I talked to some friends of mine who was an attorney. I didn't have an attorney because I didn't think I needed one. But I talked to him and I said, you know, how do I prepare for such a thing?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and especially when the judge sort of looked at me sort of with quizzical eyes, like, I don't really know what this is about. And I had to really, you know, really explain step by step of what a proper exposed transparency or photograph that's printed well looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And there was more than just being, you know, trying to be sued for, and there wasn't a lot of money here, which was crazy. So it was one of those things that, you know, I'm glad it was came out.
On the other side,
of being real.
Yeah.
<Right. Yes. laughs>
So now you left Chicago and you come to the Bay Area.
Yes.
And what brought you out here?
I always wanted to live on the West Coast. I was actually going to move to Los Angeles because I had friends that lived in LA, and commercially it seemed like the right place to go to.
Mm-hmm.
I was avoiding New York. I love New York, but I was avoiding New York. I didn't want any more winter. Do you blame me?
No.
And so I was on my way to Los Angeles because I have a really good friend that lives down there. And then I visited San Francisco because my brother had moved here about 8 months before I did. And I, you know, really fell in love with the city. I really fell in love with the whole smaller scale. And compared to Los Angeles is very sprawling, you know, basically too many freeways. Yeah, and it's beautiful. I mean, the weather to me was really appealing, but I didn't want to basically live in a car.
I was just going to say, it's car dependent as well, especially compared to Chicago.
Right. And so I ended up staying here and started shooting for Macy's and let's see, Emporium. Emporium was here. Macy's was here. Shackley was here. Did a lot of work with Levi Strauss. And my style really sort of was, and photography was actually became much, much, much more sort of even looser editorial, I guess is the word I'd use, because the weather was better. The lighting, I think, is better. So the whole look, and I was still shooting film at the time. I was still shooting 120 exclusively pretty much at that point. And I loved what was happening with the location and the lighting. And I think the West Coast sort of gave me a real boost in the, you know, creative arm, as they say.
I can definitely agree with that.
Yeah. So the work even was more exemplified as far as where I was going, and then I would do a lot of what I would call test. We call them test shoots or proposal shoots, and so I did a lot of that on my own actually before I went after certain clients, with Shackley or with Levi Strauss, who I really loved their whole advertising campaign at the time in the mid late 80s. Was again just sort of right up my alley because it was very sort of lifestyle and a lot of movement and, you know, very fresh and not staged and usual location. And so it was kind of like a hand in glove scenario. So I'd go out and do these great shoots. You know, we'd go up to Tamales Bay or beyond in these wonderful locations and shoot, you know, rafts and rafts and rafts of editorial clothing with crews that I put together myself. And then I'd take the prototype into Levi Strauss and say, you know, this is your product. Do you like the look of what this looks like? Can we go to work together?
Oh, so you're kind of putting the horse before the cart kind of thing.
Yes. Yeah. And so I was hired specifically for those, what that was.
Yeah.
For the product that you had already created.
Yeah, for the style and the approach and the lighting and the mood and all, you know, those layers that you're hired for.
Yeah.
So you weren't actually working with a studio at this time. You're doing freelance and just hiring your teams with you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's cool.
Nice.
Had a studio over at 3rd and 20th, right there, right across from the old police station, which I guess burnt down. And now it's all full of, I guess it's UCSF buildings.
And
dog patch area, I guess they call it now.
Yep.
So that was the hotbed of photography. That was where we sort of had this studio, had Western light in the studio, which was phenomenal lighting. But again, it was mostly location work that was my drawing card.
It sounds like you're kind of focusing more. Once you got out here, the natural light seemed to be your main.
Oh, yeah. The natural light, mixing artificial light with natural light, obviously, was kind
of
was still my forte. And then, you know, really directing the mood of what that shot looked like.
Mm-hmm. No assistants pulling down trousers.
Well.
Oh, I'm still just
there. There is a story, but I'm not going to go there. But it was a lot of fun. Again, it was creating the scene, the set, directing it. There's a lot of responsibility. I mean, which part of me really loved. Part of me was, you know, pulled into it. I mean, it was business, definitely business. It was also artistic. Mm-hmm. Which is the other world that has to come into play. So those two things, I think, are really inseparable in at least commercial photography. Mm-hmm. You have to be a really smart, savvy, fair business person and aware. And then I think the other side of it is you have to be, I can remember days when we're shooting, you have, you know, a huge crew of people, you know, many, many sets of things to shoot, so much daylight to shoot it in, right? And, you know, like it doesn't always flow off, you know, as quickly as you would hope, you know, some of them. And, you know, people are people. Some people can get into the groove of it. Some people need more coaching. And so for the most part, it worked out great. I mean, there were some really great models. I got to help cast a lot of the projects with some of the better clients, mm-hmm. which was great because I had worked with a lot of these people too. So we knew the dance basically with each other.
Yeah,
that makes a huge difference.
It sounds like you gained a lot more creative freedom in the transition from Chicago out here.
There was a lot more freedom. It was a lot less, much more project by project basis.
A lot more work though, I'm sure, because you're, like you said, you have to balance the business with the creative side too.
It is. I mean, you have to be, you know, you're paying for assistance, you're paying for the studio, you have an overhead, you have, you know, bills to pay yourself to maintain that. And then you have, you know, you obviously have to be competitive with what you're doing with other commercial photographers in the area. I mean, the highlight for me was one of the best compliments I heard out of our director. And this was kind of one of the defining moments. I walked in with a portfolio, and the art director was one of the major magazines here, one of the major clients, and said to me, "Wow, your work is fantastic." And I said, "Well, thanks a lot. I really appreciate that. That's great. You know, when do we go to work?"
Right.
And this is one of those really well-paying clients with a huge budget. And he turned to me and said, "Well, your work is so on par with Bruce Weber."
Whoa.
And I was like, "Wow, that's great. He's one of my idols. I love his work. It's fresh, it's natural, it's right in the target for the pocket. It's real, you know, it's well exposed. It just has the right energy." I said, "Thank you so much. When do we go to work?"
Right. I take that as a yes.
And you know, Weber's day rate was way out there. I mean, we're talking $50,000-$100,000 per project. And so he said, "Well, the client wants to hire a named photographer." And I said, "Well,
I've got a name."
I have a name. It's not Bruce Weber, and I really appreciate the compliment because I think he's one of my idols actually at the time. Mm-hmm. And but you know, I didn't get the project. They wanted to spend the money on a named photographer to have his name in the galley of the magazine. So to me, it was, you know, it was saying to me, and I had friends that had worked. I have a friend that works in Paris and New York that said, you know, that was a huge compliment to you because I was just, you know, I'd been in the business for maybe 7-8 years, you know, and really.
So relatively early.
Relatively early. Yeah. And, you know, to be, you know, be told you're, you know, on par with one of the major shooters in the world was like, wow, I guess I have, you know, grown a little bit.
Yeah.
And by a big client to boot.
And by a big client. And so it's re-solidified, you know, which I think is important as a photographer to, you know, is the work you're doing on par to, doesn't mean it has to be like someone else's, but if it's to the quality of a major shooter, that says a lot, I think, to, you know, a beginning photographer.
It really does.
Yeah, it does.
And it helps kind of inspire you to move.
It was a huge
forward.
Compliment, but I, you know, would have preferred the check.
Well, of course. Did you ever return?
Yeah.
Did you ever circle back to see if you can get some future gigs
with
them?
I did. They spent, you know, those were the days when they were spending lots of money. I mean, they'd charter a plane. They'd go to some island.
It was like
money.
Forgiven.
There was no more money than God on the, you know, being
And not
passed.
More photographers.
We're talking
money.
The 80s.
So. Right. Yeah. And a lot of monies, a lot of big budgets, yes. Lots of martini lunches, lots. I mean, people smoked in the galleries.
It's like banking. I mean, boy, they you know, they would spend money on parties and everything. I was a banker. Oh my God, those are the great years. You know,
then after such a madman era,
such decadence.
Yes,
it was obscene.
Yeah.
In comparison.
But now you've made a transition. You're out of commercial. Why the transition? What
Well, the market changed dramatically. I mean, the having the gallery and the studio here, you know, work was drying up, basically. Mm. The amount of work being available for studios had been here for 20 years.
Yeah.
People were either going to New York, going to Europe, or closing down. I mean, it was kind of like either you went to Los Angeles or there was still a lot of work being done commercially in Chicago, and New York was the big pull. Mm-hmm. And I did not want to go back at that time to Chicago.
No cold.
No. I mean, even though you know, I know photographers that were making, you know, really hefty, way deep into six figures every year.
Yeah. This is into the 90s here?
Early 90s. So the transition for me was I was still shooting projects, not as often. And then decided that I wanted to stay, and I started working in a different field. I started working in interior spaces with architects and designers, and because I knew lighting so well and I knew space so well, I was hired on as sort of a liaison and expert with commercial buildings. Mm-hmm. And I worked with sort of as a spokesperson for manufacturers and designers and architects.
Oh, okay.
So that was actually pretty fruitful. I missed shooting mm-hmm. so much. But at the same token, I got to be part of a team again with some pretty exciting clients, with projects in it was great working with the architects. I really enjoyed it, being part of building something and creating something and bringing your voice to a project and being part of that team project. I really love that whole scenario. I think it goes back to Cranston, I think, in Chicago. I think being part of that team, you know, you're at the helm creating, or part of the team creating the advertising campaign, or you're creating that space or that building, or you're working with that client to determine what they want in their space. And there was some very big money being handed over with the .com and the venture capitalists. And yeah. I worked with clients from World Bank here, helping them with their interior spaces. And, you know, again, it was back to the parallel to me was, you know, whether you were shooting an image for an advertising campaign or this venture capitalist CEO was wanting to choose the right interior space and have it furnished right and lit right. And, you know, for venture capitalists, it was critical to have that mm-hmm. that image, I guess is a word I'll use, right, in place for his place to his potential venture capitalists and donors or people that were going to actually invest in the yes. company. So we were back to that, again, image of what image are you projecting? Is that solid? What is that image? Does everything else surrounding that image exemplify and support what you want to achieve? Mm-hmm. And so, again, there is still that layering of psychology and how is that executed and what does it look like and how is it projected and how you package it. And so it was the complexity of that, I think, is drew me in because mm-hmm. I like that layering and I like to have that conversation and the execution. And then, you know, whether we were creating models for the client for their office building mm-hmm. with the architect.
Any notable buildings that just come off the top?
I know we worked at 101 Cal, of course, on several floors. And then I know we worked for many buildings on Spear Street. This was pre-Google, mm-hmm. of course.
Yeah.
A lot of banks, actually, mm-hmm. major banks, Bank of the West. I know Chase we worked with.
It's all downtown San Francisco, right?
Yeah. Right, downtown San Francisco. Yeah, San Francisco. And there were new venture capitalists as well that, again, were really staging themselves basically to be, you know, have investors invest in them. So there was a lot riding on decisions. And I know one of the key things I remember really distinctly as I walked into this boardroom trying to close this deal, it's a very large deal with this CEO. He closed the door, and the guy had traveled all over the world and with World Bank and was very educated and very experienced in banking and investing. And mm-hmm. closed door, and he said, I have to level with you. He said, this whole arena of what we're doing here is brand new to me. He said, why should I buy X over, Z? And I had to break it down to him that he was, getting a Mercedes product for, a VW price. Because, and this is what it looked like, and this is the reason behind it financially. And so I had to break it down to him.
Back to the educating the client
scenario. Yeah. I had to break it down to him and say, this is what the design team has given you because it hits these marks. This is what you are looking for and projecting what your image is. This is the cost part of it. So it was all really broken down for him to understand that on his terms. And then he said, lastly, I said, with that expertise and the clients we have worked on, and I had, re-emphasized the past clients that we worked on beforehand, I said, they've been very happy with it. They've been very successful with it. They trusted our judgment. It has made them help make them successful. And I'm sure basically it will do the same for you. And boom, it was done. He signed it. It was done.
Yeah.
So, client that pays it now.
Check.
Yes.
A commission check. Healthy commission check. So, that again, it deals with communication and education.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
It's one of the kind of trifectas. You have your creative ability, then your business sense, and then the being able to educate the client to build that business sense. I mean, without those kind of three things.
Yeah, and also understanding their vision.
Yeah, you really have to let them. They're still driving the bus,
right?
But you're like this coach that has to have your hands ready to grab that wheel
every time.
Every time. Mm-hmm. So that unfortunately sort of was doing great until we went through this lovely recession.
Ah,
yeah. Is that kind of the time whenever you shifted from behind the camera to kind of moving more toward this Harvey Milk scenario? Or?
Well, I had taught before back in the day. Mm-hmm. I had taught photography here to adults.
Here at the Harvey Milk Photo Center?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
And really loved it. It was before we renovated the building, which has been 11 years ago. And so everything was drying up as far as the business I was in at the time. And so I just purchased a home and had a mortgage.
Which is always about the time when business starts to dry up. The moment exactly. that you invested somewhere.
So I'm like, okay, I don't want to lose this investment, ideally. And so I need to go back to work. And of course, I was being interviewed for people with people for jobs, very nice jobs, but nobody was making a decision at the time. No one would pull the trigger. Mm-hmm. And so after about a year of just coasting, I talked to my dad on the phone. He said, I think you should just volunteer a day a week just to get yourself off the chair and off the computer and off the phone. And so I said, I think you're right. I think I'm talking on the phone and living on the computer 70 hours a week. And so with what's coming back. And so I applied here. I came here and said, can I teach a course? Can you guys need anybody for the summer? I need something to do part-time. I'm going slowly mad, fast.
What are you missing? What can I contribute? Yeah.
So this is my background. I taught here. Can you guys, a couple days a week would be great for me. And so I started teaching. I think I started teaching kids darkroom photography.
Really? Nice.
And then my previous supervisor, Jenny Rogers, who's now the head honcho up at Mill Valley Recreation Center.
Yeah, I remember her.
She was great to work with.
Yes.
Another Midwesterner. And so I tried to support her as best I could. She was very supportive for me. And so she said, I think you, at the end of the summer, said, I think you should apply for the director's job. And I looked at her and I said,
Pourquoi?
Okay. what do I need to do? I have to take an exam.
Oh, is that how it played out?
So I took an exam and...
Because this is all still under the city.
City and county of San Francisco.
Yeah.
And so took the exam along with several hundred other people.
Oh, wow.
And did really well. And then had an interview, had three interviews actually, and then was offered the position.
Wow. It's difficult enough to get in with, you know, a city, a place that's city owned. It's a whole other thing to be a director straight out of educating. Like, so you went from teacher to director.
Yeah, I think a lot of the skills, though, were transferable.
Of course,
you know, with running the studio, with working with large clients, with working with teams of people, I think.
You had a background that fit the situation.
Yeah, it fit the situation. I knew being a member here and teaching here, I knew the inside track of what this place was in the past. And I also... really had vision, which I used in the exchange of the interview, of where I wanted to take this place if I had the wheel.
Uh-huh. Any specifics at the time that weren't necessarily here?
Well, you know, the social media, the extensive exhibits, the volunteer program.
So they didn't have the exhibits like you do now?
Not to this level. Mm-hmm. They did have exhibits, obviously.
Mm-hmm. How many are you averaging now a year?
Last year was about 15. We have gone to 21 between here and McLaren Lodge, mm-hmm. which is a daunting clip.
Yeah.
Which is definitely important to note that you do, you know, work hand in hand sometimes with Mill Valley and helping them get exhibits. We were actually a part of one recently in Mill Valley with the landscape work.
Yeah,
landscape.
That was a really beautiful project.
Yeah. Jimbo over here
I was very proud of everyone's work.
Jim had his work right behind the city council. So every time there was a video meeting, Jim's getting free advertising with no name.
That's the only time I watch a city council meeting on TV.
You and five others.
That's right.
Did that increase your business?
Doubt that.
But it was fun to watch it.
Are there residual checks that are coming this way?
None.
I think
you know
the first commissions.
That's exactly what I was talking about.
But it was so much beautiful work seeing that up there, and just kind of coming back to what we were talking about, 15 to 20 exhibits a year. We got the opportunity to work with you last year with Exposed.
That's right, yeah.
And it was in conjunction with the San Francisco Street Photography Group that we're a part of, and it was a jury exhibit. Dave, you were one of the judges, along with, was it Dwayne?
Dwayne Newton,
uh-huh. Yeah.
Roxanne Worthington.
Grant Rusk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we had a really good lineup.
Jennifer McFarlane.
Yep, that's right.
That's the
Jennifer.
One out. But yeah, we had a great lineup of judges. We ended up with 54, 55 images, I think, total. Mm-hmm. And I think it was unique for the center myself, because I hadn't noticed any street photography related stuff in the past. And we had well over 300 people there on opening night, I think.
Easily. It was a really beautiful rendition of work. I mean, it was fresh. It was a new direction for us.
There's a connection that the locals had.
I really, hats off to both you guys, for helping bringing that here. I think it was a game changer for us.
Well, that was, it's such a great venue to have it's a great exhibition space.
I think it really resonated really strongly with the department and the community.
Yeah.
Good.
I think there was a really positive message coming out of that. Mm-hmm. And it introduced a lot of new photographers that.
Yes, it did.
A lot of us didn't know
people
about.
People are still talking about that. And this happened back in December 2016. Ran through January.
I even had the opportunity to meet some new photographers from the group that I'd never even met in person before.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But that's to say that a lot of these exhibits that come through here, there's that one. You just recently had the Nat Geo pop-up show.
That was a fun one-night event.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. just one evening. But that amongst, and then every, for the past few years, you've had the Pride
We were doing that as an annual project. This year will be hopefully a team project on that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Imogen Cunningham.
We've done Imogen Cunningham here in Paris when she went, when she was 82 to Paris in the 60s herself. I mean, talk about a gutsy broad, I guess.
Yeah.
And she was actually people said that's the word she would respect you to use.
Good. Truth.
We've had Ruth Bernhard here, Fred Lyon.
No, Fred Lyon.
With a brand new book coming out in this fall.
Uh-huh. Oh, he does.
He does.
Okay. We'll have to get some information about that and put it up in the
fantastic,
show notes.
Fantastic. There's some press being buzzed about that now.
Oh, good.
Now, Fred's been shooting in San Francisco for...
Oh, my gosh. He's been here since the 50s.
Yeah. And his work goes back that whole duration.
That's Fred was from New York. Worked with some major clients in New York and ended up marrying one of Richard Avedon's top models, and then they moved out here and had a family.
Mm. If that gives you some good enough background right there.
So I guess it was a really great story. Fred is a great guy to work with.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear he's got the next book coming out too.
Just an amazing guy. We had his show here about 3 years ago, 2.5, 3 years ago, and we did a book signing, and I guess they pulled all the books from the Western United States, and we sold all of them out. It was the biggest book signing that they had for an artist.
Wow.
So that was a really good
feather
in our hat. We've got upcoming shows coming up.
Let's talk about that. Yeah. Let's do a little plugging on some upcoming.
Okay. I think the big piece for this year would be Jay Blakesburg.
Mm-hmm.
Who is a rock and roll photographer. We're doing a 40-year retrospective of his work. Jay is a noted photographer that's shot for Rolling Stone and Vanity Fair for many, many years, and has shot everyone and anyone in the rock and roll music industry that you can ever think of.
Even Hollywood, I noticed to a point.
He's got people that are in the film world. He's got people that are celebrities. He's got musicians, studio people. I mean, everyone that you can shake a stick at, he has photographed.
Wow.
Yeah. I saw his like Jerry Garcia images, Iggy Pop. Mm-hmm. I mean,
he's photographed Tina Turner, David Bowie,
Bob Dylan.
Dylan's son.
Tom Waits
is part of it. Joni Mitchell, who is one of my idols.
Yeah,
beautiful, very whimsical.
Carlos
shot
Santana.
Oh God, yes.
And a lot of these, he's inviting a lot of the celebs that will be music celebs and royalty that will be here
to the show.
Hopefully, we'll be here at the show.
And that's in November.
It's November 9th.
November 9th.
That's the opening reception.
Opening reception. It will be a very packed house.
I expect it to be bleeding out all the doors of the exhibit room.
I think the park's going to be full.
Oh, yes. Just going to pop in real quick to throw some love to our sponsor, Glass Key Photo. This is San Francisco's premier analog photography store and a staple for many photographers here in the Bay Area. If you're looking for analog gear, repairs, film, old or new, amazing zines by local artists, or simply want some great company and the opportunity for some fun photo walks, this is the place to be. You can find out more information and upcoming happenings by following them on Facebook or Twitter by searching Glass Key Photo or visit their website at glasskeyphoto.com. Now, after 5 years in the colorful and historic Haight District, they have relocated closer to downtown. You can now find them at 1230 Sutter Street. That's between Polk Street and Van Ness. It's a fantastic new venue offering a ton of space, breath of fresh air, I'm sure, for not only Gordon and Matt down there, but all photographers here in the Bay Area. Above all, while in San Francisco, be sure to visit Glass Key Photo and give a big hello from all of us here at Street PX. Do we know, I don't mean to tangent and we'll cycle back, but I understand you're in the process of a lighting project right now.
We are.
And I wanted to get that out there. I want to talk about some more of the exhibits, of course, but you want to talk a little bit about the lighting project real quick?
Sure. We have been working the last probably 2.5, 3 years on a gallery lighting fundraiser project. We are working our way very, very hard to get donations and sponsors on getting the project underway. My goal was to get this in place before we launch the Blakesburg retrospective. I'm hoping we can do that. Not sure if it's going to be a reality, but we're really going to try to do that.
That's why I wanted to bring it out there.
So it's really vital. If you guys can assist us, please do so. It would be really appreciative. I know it's all tax deductible, and we have everything in place where you can actually donate online to do that, and then you'll get a receipt for your taxes.
How can they do that?
They can go to our website, which is www.harveymeltphotocenter.org, and look under donate at the top of the menu.
Okay.
And that's all set up to donate any amount that you're gracious to give would be appreciated, from, you know, $5 to $500.
Or $5,000.
Or $5,000.
If you're so inclined.
And
now, this is lighting coming from DeYoung, right?
There's a couple things going on. The lighting from DeYoung has actually been donated. So they have been really kind to us with donating. They've redone their galleries, and they have given us their lighting fixtures. And so we're looking to find the finances to have the labor portion of it, and some track and some new LED bulbs.
Just for you people out there, the DeYoung is the DeYoung Museum.
DeYoung Museum.
In San Francisco.
Yeah, and so kind of them to help.
Yes,
but
that's right.
The expensive part is the installation.
It seems to be the pricey part. We did collaborate, actually, as a plug to the DeYoung. We plugged with the Panama Pacific 1915, 100-year, I would say, anniversary. And we had actually quite a lot of photography, actually even more than the DeYoung did. And we collaborated with their marketing department, the public relations department. And so we were plugging their show, and they were plugging our photography show. And it was a really great collaboration that started this dialogue.
That's good. Nice. Cross-pollination.
Yeah.
That's key.
It's the name of the game.
You got to do it.
But I definitely wanted to have that out there, because it would be so nice to have that lighting in place before such a show.
It would be great. I know Jay is working really, really hard with the behind the scenes, because all the work is going to be printed on a brand new substance. It's going to be done on metal. And it's going to be a brand new, the images will float off the wall, actually, without glass or frames. And so the work is going to really, really be popping off the wall, as they say.
This is
going to be really dynamic. This will be the show of the year. I've always wanted to do a show with music.
Mm-hmm.
And so this dialogue actually has been in almost 2 years in the making, actually, to make this happen. The hardest part of this show was actually choosing and curating the images.
Do you remember how many were kind of at first, how many there were total?
At least 600 or 700.
And then the final?
Close to about 130.
Kill the babies. That's how it comes down.
We will. This was a really hard thing, because there's different stages of Jay's work as an artist. So we wanted to also show his style changes and his approaches to photography. Jay started when he was 15. You know, and I think he got $7 for his first job. You start someplace always.
Yeah.
We always start as a seed.
And you know, Jay's, you know, well published, has probably a dozen books on the market.
I saw his recent one, and that's where I'm remembering seeing all these names.
Jay will have books here. He'll be signing books. We're going to create a special poster. Jay's been very generous to the center. We're going to donate proceeds from the poster to the center.
Oh, okay.
Also, a portion of the sales of the images are going up for sale. Will be actually donated back to the center, too.
Wow. These are the metal prints that you're talking about?
Yeah, the aluminum prints, which are the special coating. They are spectacular. I saw the prototypes. They are basically off the charts beautiful.
And to emphasize, I'm assuming these are going to be limited edition, like one of
Limited edition, for sure. Definitely come early.
Yeah, because there's going to be a lot of sold signs. I
have a feeling there'll be a lot of sold signs. Yeah. And I think especially with the music, you know, celebrities that are being asked to come, Jay's very good friends with a lot of these people that he's worked with for years and years. So I imagine they will come.
Yeah.
And
yeah, if anybody can get him here, it's him.
It's definitely him. I mean, he knows, you know, he's shot everyone you can possibly imagine.
Yeah. Wow. And that's not an exaggeration. I mean, if you get a chance to check out his book and his portfolio out there, you're going to be pulling your jaw up off your lap seeing how many recognizable faces and so exquisite. But at the same time, there's also going to be a secondary show going on at the Lodge. Is that right?
This is true. At the McLaren Lodge, which is our headquarters for San Francisco Recreation Parks Department, we're doing a smaller show of images that were photographed in the Golden Gate Park itself. Mm. And so I know there's photographs of Bonnie Raitt, I think Jackson Browne, I think possibly Tom Waits, Jerry Garcia.
Oh yeah,
some of the majors that have been in there. So that show is going to be a small tailored show.
Oh, okay. It's going to be metal prints as well.
The same. Yes.
Same thing. Mm-hmm. Okay,
the aluminum prints.
Running at the same time as the
running at the very air. Same okay. time. Correct.
Yeah.
Right.
So we'll pull all of this information together, and if you're driving in a car right now, put the pen and paper away. We'll put this up in the show notes, and we'll also be giving updates as we move forward closer to November.
Just burn November 9th into your mind.
Yes,
you got to be here.
Mark that on a calendar some way. Scratch into
early.
Your arm.
Come early.
Yeah, and if you're not in if you're not living in San Francisco, if you're outside of here, you're one of our fellow Midwesterners, for instance, then it right now is a good time to get a plane ticket.
And by the way, Dave, I'm putting in my. If you need somebody to shoot that,
reception. No.
We'll talk.
We're gonna have to duke this one out.
We'll talk about the suitcase of money later.
Oh yes. Yeah, see there you go. I got a bigger suitcase. You know.
That's true. You always carry that backpack around.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Not enough money in there, but
no, the bigger suitcase. It's mostly dirty laundry,
yeah,
right?
That's right.
That's the ringer. But now that's an amazing show, and I know that's the headliner. What are some of the other exhibits that people can look forward to as well?
Into the new year,
yes.
We're going to be working on, obviously, several things. I know there's going to be a repeat with National Geographic with their team program, which I'm not sure where they're going this year. They have about 40, 45 students that go off with professionals from the magazine and do a location basically for 10, 12, 14 days.
Yeah, full-along workshop.
Really great workshop. Really wonderful organization.
Now the one you just had, where did they go?
They were in Yosemite Valley, actually.
Ah, yeah.
And okay. So outstanding work, actually, for high schoolers for the first time out.
Yeah. Saw that exhibit. It was impressive.
Beautiful work. Really well. It's unfortunately, it was only one night, but it was really a fun night.
Yeah.
What else is coming down the pike? We've got, of course, I'm working on a project which is still in the formation stage with sort of contemporary California photographers, men and women, which I'm working on for probably March, April of next year. I know there's talk about doing a show on indigenous folks from Hawaii, and that's coming up possibly later. Fall, probably, if that happens.
Mm-hmm.
There's talk about maybe a street photography show again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know we had a really great time with Ken Walton and his...
Oh, street photo?
Street photo.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
That was a really fun, wild week. But it is.
Well, actually, that's a good subject to bring up.
Thanks for Casper and Jim bringing that to us.
Absolutely. And for you guys out there listening, Street Photo is a street photography festival that if you were living under a rock for the last few months or for this summer, was hosted here at Harvey Milk Photo Center over the course of a week and got real interesting there at the end, didn't it?
It was fun.
How about that Bruce Gilden talk?
I knew you were going to do that.
Hey, you can't talk about Street Photo 2017 without that knife.
You're going to find the wound and put the knife back in.
Oh, no. The wounds, the 1,000 cuts all happened that night.
Yeah, but they healed really fast because
before the night was out.
Because you and Dave saved the day.
Oh,
they
saved the
day.
We were all sweating bullets.
Everyone was
basically
running around like...
in a full house of, I don't know how many people were in the room.
200 at bare
least
minimum.
250, 300 people. Yeah. And things were kind of calm until Mr. Gildan took the mic and...
was not pleased about the
not pleased about anything that was happening.
Or anything that was happening at that moment.
Now, wait a minute. Now, Bruce might be listening.
So. Oh, Bruce, you know we love you.
He was a fabulous photographer. I really, really do love his work. His earlier work, I think, is really, really quite stellar.
Yeah.
And really noteworthy. It's a great eye. But it was a challenging evening.
Yeah.
And we got the projector clear, and immediately Bruce turned from upset about the situation to immediately happy and satisfied.
We moved forward.
An outstanding lecture.
Yes.
Really beautiful lecture. I think people were really impressed with the content and having him here as a guest.
Yeah.
But and, you know, having a cart that I dragged out of the costume room and
the new projector from down here.
New projector, which I swooped off the shelf down here and had a team left and right plugging it in and booting it up. And we saved the plane, getting the plane to land, I guess, as they say.
The unanticipated benefit of all of this, I need to note, because just for everybody out there, we got this on video this whole evening and audio.
I can't wait to see that.
Set up a camera off to the side prior to all of this going down and not expecting that to happen. And it just so happens that when everything fell apart and Bruce stopped talking for a little while, lights came back on and Dave, myself, Ken were all sweating bullets and amongst everyone else. He stepped off to the side and was talking to the crowd and answering questions in his own Bruce Gildan way. Uh-huh. And we ended up with probably about 30 minutes of additional content. Directly from Bruce, talking photography, talking to crowd members,
which was actually really nice.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll have to remember this technique, I guess, going forward.
Yeah, we got to like purposely mess something up again.
While you guys were running around having heart attacks, trying to get everything fixed,
technical difficulties with cardiac arrest.
Yeah, we were having a nice talk with Bruce, and he was answering these questions. It was fascinating.
So it actually was very fruitful.
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
and let us not forget Janet Delaney.
Oh, yes.
And was she?
Janet, what a pro. I mean, just beautiful, beautiful, insightful work. In fact, I was talking to her. I'm thinking about adding her into this project for next year.
Okay.
Oh, really?
We've already talked about it.
Yeah.
And she has said yes. I've also talked to Judy Dater, who has also said yes.
Nice.
So, again, two very well-known American contemporary photographers that I really respect their work. So the show will be really kind of focused on, you know, current contemporary California photographers for next year.
And I'm assuming there a possibility Street Photo may be here again, at least in
I
some
I sure hope so.
Regard, yeah.
I have
if
nothing
Ken's listening.
But, I have nothing but, you know, great memories of that. The Street Photo, the exposed show we did was amazing. I think we could do an expanded version of that.
And we were talking earlier, kind of in relation to the opening with Film Week coming up, a possibility of maybe a pop-up show.
I'm all for it. I mean, I'm, you know, my aspect here is really to be a champion and create the platform for groups, new photographers, support the medium, whether it's alternative, film, digital, video, whatever it is. I really think it's really important to have a place, to have a home where people can, you know, a venue where people can go to, you know, see the work, talk about the work, commiserate, you know, make new friends, make new connections, learn new techniques, new approaches. I think that's what's really important, is never to sort of sit on your hands and become complacent with what you're doing as a photographer.
I
think when you do that, then you might just hang up your camera strap.
Yeah,
because I think every day is kind of a challenge of like how you can be happy with the images you're creating, but then where are you going next? What are you doing next? How are you reinterpreting the image? You know, I think that's the constant, I guess, visual hunger that I hope to keep the fire going not only for myself, but for the people that we have here and the groups that come here and to support that.
That's right. Yeah.
So it brings me a lot of satisfaction, I guess, to be able to have the opportunity to offer that and to champion, you know, new photographers or established photographers, and to support that visually.
Well, it's very important for the people that live in the San Francisco Bay Area, but also if you're visiting the San Francisco Bay Area, stop on by.
There's always a show of some form going on. It might not be opening, you know, reception night, but there's a magnificent exhibit room where all of this is located.
Yes, hopefully with magnificent lighting to go with it.
sooner than later. You all heard that.
Yep. Anything helps.
I think it will enhance the work. I think it will really elevate the work.
And
the experience of looking at work, I think, will be changed dramatically. So I'll be shameless and, you know, donate away.
Be shameless.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, and this institution, the Harvey Milk Photo Center, is so important, especially nowadays with a lot of institutions,
nowadays.
Yeah, institutions closing.
Yeah, we've seen an increase dramatically with people signing up.
Yeah.
We're trying to expand our hours, which we have done for the summer. We're going to probably stay open probably 3 to 10, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I've got classes running. We create classes here, which we have basically going all year round. The other thing I'd like to talk about is volunteerism and volunteering with the center. I think it's really important to give back. I think it's really, you know, whatever time you have, whether it's a half a day or 3 hours or 4 hours, we have a volunteer program here, which you can help with helping the staff run the daily operations to helping us hang a show, one of the major parties, helping us with our efforts in social media, getting the word out with posters throughout the city. There's always something to obviously do to help get the word out.
And you started as a volunteer.
I started as a volunteer. I believe in it. I think it's a really healthy thing to do. A lot of the staff we have were volunteers. We've hired them to see, you know, if they would help us, and, you know, obviously they work really hard and they have the right attitude and very supportive. And I think we have a really great crew here. We have a great crew of volunteers as well. We couldn't do it. We couldn't do a quarter of what we do without the volunteers. We are part of the San Francisco Recreation and Parks Department. And so we're really happy to have one of the largest dark rooms left in the country.
Yes. And it is huge.
It is behemoth.
Yes, it is. Gorgeous,
and,
though.
And it's, you know, we are becoming the orphanage of enlargers.
Kind of coming out that way. Yeah.
And, you know, we're really pleased to have this beautiful space, which is very, very special to me. And I know a lot of people.
And it doesn't just stop with volunteers. You also offer internships.
We're working on internships for artists. So that's underway. We're working on a residency program. We've had several interns from different colleges come in and work a whole semester. We have that under place. So you can also contact me directly if you're interested in that.
Do they get college credit doing this?
They do.
Okay.
There's actually credit that's given. It's an evaluation with the professors and the colleges, and it's a really structured program as far as the duties and the project, and they're graded, and they get a credit. They get credit for what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very helpful. Again, it's a win-win situation at the table because we benefit from their time and their assistance, and they obviously get credit and gain a great amount of experience.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very positive exchange.
Yeah, future members to the Harvey Milk Center. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah,
and if you're in San Francisco tonight, you get to see a lot of work from individuals that volunteer, members, or part of the staff that's here too.
Yeah,
so it's going to be a big party. We're going to have a barbecue and lots of goodies and great art, great folks. Okay. So come on out and join us. Say hello. Check out the center. Check out the gallery. We hope you will come and see us.
All right, Jim, do you have anything else? You want to jump right into that that last question?
Well, let's ask Dave. Oh, he's looking at me. But we usually end every segment with this question. If you had a choice of any time period or any country, any place in the world that you would want to photograph from the inception of the camera, where would that be and when would that be?
Oh, my gosh. There's so many periods in history that I would love to have been a fly on the wall or part of it.
Yeah.
So probably the 20s and 30s in Paris. Yeah. It was kind of that in Berlin. I mean, those two places were kind of like a hotbed of artistic goings on, for lack of other words. I mean, there were writers, artists, collectors, sculptors. I mean, it was a really creative hotbed. And I just think it would have been unbelievable to go out and have drinks with these major artists.
Oh, yeah.
And writers and, be part of that round table. I think that would have been really an experience to be part of.
Reminds me of Woody Allen's Midnight in Paris.
That's a great film.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there was just so much. It was a different world, obviously.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of creative freedom, I think. And people were really experimenting with different artistic styles and visionary people that were kind of coming out of the woodwork, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that draws me in quite a bit. Music as well as the arts.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
The whole sort of before we plunged into, sort of the darkness of the World War and that going on with Germany.
So I would say make sure the time machine lets you get out of there prior to the bomb dropping.
Before exactly. The occupation.
Great answer.
Before the occupation.
Right, right.
Right. Have a ticket on your way out before that happened.
Yeah. Excellent, excellent. Well, before we let you go, is there anywhere that you want to share that people can see some of your work, or maybe we can find some of your old photography anywhere?
Well, I need to spend some time. I'm like one of those guys that the shoemaker that the kids go without shoes. And so I do need to create a brand new website. So I may be knocking on your door.
Hey,
to do that. There's a lot of work actually that I do need to capture and get out, because I've gone through some different sort of style changes myself through time.
All right.
And so from shooting a lot of people to now doing a lot more landscape work, like you, Jim.
Uh-huh.
I know you do some exceptional landscape work. So
thank you very
maybe
much.
We'll have to go out on an excursion one of these days.
Yeah,
I would love to do that.
Yeah,
and I know I'm in awe at the work that you both do in the street. So, really beautiful, really amazing. I know that takes a special approach to deal with what's out there.
Oh yeah, as our listeners know,
it can be very dicey.
True. Yeah.
But always satisfying.
And very challenging.
Oh, yes.
But some of the work I see back is just really inspirational. Mm-hmm. My hat goes off to you guys and the people that do that.
Well, thank you very much for that. And as far as for like seeing some more of the work, we'll pull some images from you and add them into the show notes. So we'll have a little gallery there set up on Street PX. So Jim, where can we find out more information about you at?
You can find it, as always, jimwatkinsphoto.com. You can find all the links to my social media platforms right there.
Excellent. And for me, you can find more information at recasper.com. All my, as Jim was putting it out there, the social media, you can find my portfolio, also workshops. Like I said at the opening of this show, I have a workshop going on the 17th and 18th for street photography here in San Francisco. I got 3 seats left as of this recording. So definitely go take a look there and sign up to the Harvey Milk Photo Center. It's going to be a great time. Don't miss out on all of our updates on Film Week coming up. Like I said, that's there in September. Take a look at Street PX Lounge on Facebook. and streetpx.com for all of our back episodes, any of the updates I just talked about, or follow us there on Twitter at streetpx. If you want to help keep us afloat and keep this going, go to patreon.com/streetpx, and you can contribute $1, $5, $10, whatever you feel comfortable with, and you get rewards. So, you know, you want a portfolio review, you want our wonderful opening theme music as a ringtone, you get rewards for what you give to us as well. And reviews. We love reviews. Reviews help us get into more ears out there. So go to iTunes, go to Google Play Music or iHeartRadio, any of these places, and let us know your feedback. We always want to hear from you, all of our wonderful listeners out there. So drop us a review or email us at feedback@streetpx.com. So above all, thank you everybody out there. Oh, Jim's putting his finger up.
I just want to mention that do not forget, check out harveymilkphoto.org. And
HarveyMilkPhotoCenter.org,
and check out all the goings on happening at this wonderful institution in San Francisco.
Yeah, that's all the any exhibits that are going on upcoming, and you can also see the history of the many of the exhibits over the last couple of years on there. And also, don't forget about the lighting project too.
That's
so
right.
please, anything helps there. If you don't want to help us, you can always help Harvey Milk too. So
there you go.
But anyway, yes, so above all, thank you everybody out there for listening to Street PX. Dave, thank you for
thank
your
you,
time.
Thank you so much for having me today. It's been a pleasure.
Wonderful. All right, everybody, we will hear, and well, actually, you will be hearing from us in a couple weeks.
There you go.
Cheers.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye now.